Welcome to the Draft Doctors Fantasy Footy Podcast with your hosts, John Crockett, Steve Fizz, and the Statesman.
G'day everybody and welcome to the Draft Doctors. Happy New Year and Merry Christmas. We have ticked over to Jan 1 and it's all about fantasy football now. The cricket, who gives a stuff? It's all fantasy football now. And Steve, Happy New Year and Merry Christmas to you, pal.
Yeah, and to you, Jono, and of course to the listeners. And I just wanted to kick off this week's show with an apology to Jono. I was listening back to last week's show, and I think I was a bit out of line. I had a look at a couple of the guys he's talked about, Seb Ross and Paddy Ryder. Now, I'm going to disagree with where you've got Seb Ross, but just because you've got someone ranked in the top 30 doesn't mean you have to draft them there, of course. So if you like him to break out, you'll probably get him a couple of rounds later. And the Paddy Ryder I actually found quite interesting. I think you've got a pretty good case to rank him as the top ruckman. So apologies on that one. But when you're humble, you've got to go the other way. And I'm strampling the Statesman.
I'm ringing straight off the meat of the bat.
I'm ringing in the new year. We're strampling the big man. And look, there's a reason. I realize we all find different things attractive. The human race, we'll all find different body types and whatever attractive. So just off the bat, but guys, my eyes have been burnt out of my skull because of Statesman and his fantasy cricket, and also also predictive search engines. I'm throwing that out there as well. Because the Statesman, he started up the fantasy BBL team. So naturally, I got into the search bar, type fantasy BBL, but before I type the L in BBL, I've actually accidentally hit enter. And the predictive text, the last letter wasn't an L, it was a W. Now, fantasy BBW brings up a whole range of things I don't ever want to see again. So after 45 minutes of vomiting, I've made a note to strample Statesman and never attempt fantasy BBL again.
Well, maybe it should be BBL fantasy. It's the first one up.
Well, I would assume that, but I guess more people are into the fantasy BBW than the fantasy BBL. This is Google's done this to me.
Maybe we did have a question. Why haven't we had a poll in a while? But put it to the list. What do you like better? And on that note, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to you, Statesman.
Yeah, and I must say straight away, gentlemen, no apologies. You copped everything you deserve, Jono. I'm sure I'm going to cop a fair bit today, so might as well keep it out on the table. And bad luck, Steve. I don't think I deserve a strimple if you can't put a couple of letters in order, mate. That's your own damn fault, to be quite honest with you. But I will say I'm starting the year in a very happy mood, seeing you brought up BBL fantasy, the old Statesman team going quite well in the top 50, gentlemen, and on a bit of a roll. So, enjoying the Big Bash right at the moment.
Yeah, it hasn't been as high scoring as the last year, but it's still been pretty good to watch. I think the bowlers have been doing all the work instead of the batsmen.
Absolutely.
But today we've got our top 30 Dream Team ranked. The Statesman's going to go through his top 30, and Steve and I are going to pick it apart as best we can and have a nice discussion about that. But if you want to follow us on social media, you can do that by checking us out at The Draft Doctors and at Statesman33. We've got the website, thedraftdoctors.com.au. We've got articles dropping, and soon the rankings will be up there for you to peruse. And Instagram as well, search The Draft Doctors there. There's going to be some content coming out in the next few days and weeks for you to all enjoy. But we are doing our top 30 Dream Team rankings today. And fire away, Statesman.
Yes, gentlemen, I must admit, going through this process, we know Steve was a little bit concerned when Sam Doherty went down that it's going to be very bland drafts. By the time I actually finished, although there was a few in the just missed out categories, I only ended up having three defenders, three forwards and one ruckman in the top 30. Now, the one ruckman's just on pure stats, but we know that ruckman's also got one concern, with a teammate who might take some time away from his main role. So we'll start with the top 10, gentlemen. There is only one non-mid in this top 10, which is a little bit of a concern, but these midfielders are very high scoring. I think it's very, very easy and simple to allocate number one to Mr. Tom Mitchell. There shouldn't be any arguments in Dream Team about that. 7 points higher than any other player averaging, broke records last year. We all knew he was an absolute ball magnet and a great scorer who was just held back by his previous coach. And the opportunities at Hawthorn, although he copped a bit of criticism through the media, at the end of the day, he had a magnificent year. So Tom Mitchell should be number one. Never really had any major injury concerns apart from his first season. So he's a pretty solid contributor on the ground as well. Paddy Dangerfield, clearly number two. 120 points was the second highest point scorer for the year. And we know he can score well even when his role changes a little bit and heads up forward. I've classed one more in the first tier of midfielders, and that is Zach Merritt. 117 points average for the past two seasons, and I can see his midfield time only increasing. So Zach Merritt I've got as the third tier one midfielder. Then we're coming up a group of mids, some that are breaking out, some that are broken out, and some that are, I think, just a little bit undervalued from last year. So we start with, in fourth, Dustin Martin. Fifth, Josh Kelly. I think we all underestimated how big he was going to go in 2017. I think that's going to continue in 18. Lachie Neal at number six. Underperformed last year, but we know he had quite a few surgeries. Taylor Adams, who was absolutely outstanding and in reflection should have been in the probably top three or four last year when we look back now, seeing he was a defender in all the formats, but a mid only now. Matt Crouch, who finally showed he had a ceiling right at the end of the year, scoring 150 in the last home and away game. So he sits at eight, and I see him stepping up. The first non-midfielder sits at number nine, and that's Rory Laird, the defender. Clearly the number one defender, but I certainly have him in the top 10. And number 10, and this was a bit hard because I had quite a few players. So we're talking players like Zorko were considered, Rory Sloane considered, the forwards in Menegola and Heaney. But I think there's a couple of little question marks about those. So they sort of got in the second rung. So it ended up going with Adam Treloar at number 10. And he got ahead of Rory Sloane and Dane Zorko, mainly because of the tag. The tag has seen both Rory Sloane and Dane Zorko drop to scores within the 50s and 60s. And if they continue to get more attention, I can see their average dropping. So that's the top 10. Mitchell, Dangerfield, Merritt, Martin, Kelly, Neal, Adams, Crouch, Laird and Treloar, gentlemen.
Do you want to tack this, Jono?
Oh, look, I'm pretty happy to tack this. I mean, pretty similar to my top 10. I had Matt Crouch at number 12 for me, and Rory Laird at 14 for me. And I've got Menegola, number 9 for me. And I had Zorko at number 7 as well. But pretty similar, one or two positions here and there. My top 10 was Titch, Danger, Zeret, Kelly, Adams, Dusty, Zorko, Treloar, Menegola, Neal. So pretty similar, but a couple of positions here or there. It's not going to make too much of a difference in the rankings, you would imagine. Steve?
Yeah, well, it's really interesting. We've all got the same top three in order. I think that's how things will go. But number four is where I'm going to start spitting a bit of fire. I've got Elliot Yeo in at number four. When we talk about our tiering, obviously, Statesman, you're putting, or even Jono as well, you're putting an emphasis on the midfielders, which, fair enough. But when I tier, I've got those three midfielders. Even Titch could be on a tier on his own, like, quite frankly, compared to the other two guys. But I really want to nail down one of those top defenders. So I've got Yeo and Laird at 4 and 5. That's where I sit on them. And I've actually got Menegola at 6. He's the only forward I've got in the top 10. So I'm obviously a little bit higher on those guys than you are, which, you know, I think it's really interesting because I see there's about 10 midfielders after that I'd be pretty happy with getting on the wraparound the other way. So if I'm missing out on one of those top defenders, I'm feeling pretty ordinary if my top defender's, you know, I'm pretty high on Jake Lloyd, but I'm feeling pretty ordinary if he's my D1 and I haven't got a top midfielder. Like, it's really interesting. A little bit higher on Treloar. I've got him at number 8, but I think the only one I'm really down on compared to you, Statesman, is I've got Matt Crouch at 14. He's just at the back end of that second tier of mids.
Yeah, it's interesting you go with the defenders and forwards so highly. I went through this process and added on 10 points for the defenders and forwards. So in other words, if a defender was going to average, say, Sam Menegola at 100, and that's where I'm predicting that he's going to be, around that 100 mark, because I think he'll spend a bit of time at half forward, then I would only put him above midfielders that I don't think are going to get over the 110 mark. So that's the way I sort of judge it, going, well, that's that 10-point barrier. Do I reckon Treloar can be 110? Well, yes, I can.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I am as well. And why I want those guys is because I just see the gulf between them and the next guys, like them and the next positional guys. But, like, I've got Kelly, Treloar, Neil, Dusty, Sloan, Adams, Rockliffe, Matt Crouch. Would anyone be surprised if they were 2 points above or 2 points below 110? Because I wouldn't be.
Yeah. No, that's very true.
So,
and you said you had three. You've got three defenders in your top 30. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. Now I've got.
I have one that I'm clearly confident that'll get around the ton mark. The other two, I think, are going to be the mid 90s.
Yep. No. Fair enough. What is the next 10 you've got there?
Okay, next 10, number 11 was Rory Sloan. He just held back. I think he can be 110+, but again, talk about that tag. I think I'm probably more comfortable saying that he's the 105 to the 110 averaging midfielder. Still side bottom, I went at 12. 13 is Dane Zorko. 14, Sam Menegola, so that is my first forward, closely followed by Isaac Heaney, who I've got at 15. So I'm tiering those two forwards, and another one coming in a couple of positions time, very, very closely. Jack McRae, I've got at 16. Number 17, Jack Billings. Number 18, I'm expecting a dip, and most people probably have him a little bit higher. I've got Bryce Gibbs. So he's at 18. And then I have the two defenders, Elliot Yeo at number 19 and Cade Simpson at 20. Now, some people have been talking about, with Doherty out, that Cade Simpson will pick up the points. I don't think he will. He is getting on in years. I think he'll play a very important role for him next year. But I think he's a mid-90s averaging defender. And I think that group, Steve was talking about the major difference, I think you're going to see a big group between 85 and 95 next year in the defender roles.
Who did you say you had at 13 there?
13 was Dane Zorko.
Zorko, sorry. I've missed one then there. What was that top 10? Can you just run through that again? I've missed one then.
Okay, so we've got Sloan, Sidebottom, Zorko, Menegola, Heaney, McRae, Billings, Gibbs, Yeo, and Simpson.
Yeah, I missed Menegola there.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I've actually got a few of these guys not even in my top 30, and I'd be really curious to start with Steel Sidebottom. For me, I know he's been very consistent, averaging in that sort of 105 area. Just the variance in his scores on a week-to-week basis, I can't have this guy as my M2. I can't have it.
I've got Sidey in my top 30. I've got him down at 24. So just the way Collingwood's transitioning at the moment, it's just going to be iffy, but he's just been that perennial 105 to 108 score in the Dream Team format, so it's hard not to lock him in your top 30, I think.
I I actually see him as the big winner out of Pendlebury moving on to other positions. And I see Pendlebury less and less. Pendlebury sneaks into my top 30, and I think it'll be the last year he's in it.
Fair enough.
Yeah, well, Pendlebury's in my top 30. So you got Gibbs at 18. I don't have him in my top 30 at all. I just found it hard to rank him as well. McRae, that was an interesting one. He was that borderline one for me. I mean, yeah, he could go another step back, but could still be that same 104, 105 type as well. I mean, it's a good pick, but I couldn't have him that high for me, especially as a pure mid this year.
I think he's just reliable. He's going to give you 22 games.
Yeah. Oh, look, too high for me, but yeah. I'd rather get him a little bit lower for me. Billings, yeah, we went too far off. I had him at 22 for me. I was 15. You haven't ranked Rocky yet. That's an interesting one. Because I've got him at 13 for myself. So a little bit higher on him. Then sounds like you are a statesman, but yeah, pretty similar in the top 10s for me as well. What about you, Steve?
Well, I think the big one I'm down on is I'm really down on Dane Zorko. I got him at 23. I think that's a pretty fair ranking. I sort of worry about, like, I know he's a great player. You sort of mentioned the tag came on Rory Sloane. Well, Rory Sloane busted out about six scores over 140. The tag hits Dane Zorko just as much. I worry about these older players having career years. I know he's a fantastic player, but that's my thoughts there. We just got Heaney and McRae outside my top 30, which I know they're, you know, very consistent. Jack McRae, I'm a big fan, probably one of the most underrated players going around. I just struggle to see him breaking into a top 10, whereas, like, I've got my sort of my 20 range midfielders, they could all be top 10 midfielders, top 5 midfielders.
Yep.
So that's the worry for me. Jack Billings, I've got him at 17 as well. The guy who I'm probably highest on who you don't have is Jake Lloyd. I've got him at 15. He's my D3 in AFL fantasy scoring. Big fan, very consistent. Second in the best and fairest. I think his average is hidden. He had an injury game where he only scored 2. I'm a big fan. I've got Cade Simpson at 16. Rocky, I've got at 13, like Jono. 18, I've got Buddy Franklin. Seems to do it year in, year out. I think with a better Swans team at the start of the year, hopefully his scores are all right. Well, his scores are all right anyway. I've got Dane Beams in at 19. I think I really like Dane Beams. He's just a jet. When he's on the park, he just drills it. I know there's a trust factor, but...
Yeah.
Our second.
And the trust factors went for me, and I will say with Jake Lloyd, he's the only defender I have in the group that just missed out.
Okay. So we're pretty close.
So I see him as number 4 defender.
So you and I are pretty close there as well, Steve. I've got Beam 16, Lloyd 17, Simpson 18, Heaney 20. So we're pretty bang on the money there in terms of our second top 10.
I really like the idea of actually getting Lloyd. I think, we've got him ranked there. I really think you'll be able to get him in the third round in most drafts, and I love that value. Mm.
Absolutely.
All right, moving on to the last 10 before I go through my 385 unlucky players from my top 30. number 21, Tom Rockcliffe. And I really found it hard where to put the Rock. Now, we'll say I think I had him at number 1 last year. It's just too many years now with I just can't confirm where his body's at. His second half of the year with that shoulder was just nightmarish. And if anyone owned him, they just would have been pulling their hair out. And I've just got to the point with Rocky to say he's an absolute gun when everything's going well. He's a bit like Dane Beams to me. If he's on the park and fully fit, you know he's going to score well. But how much can you trust him? Rocky, to me, is higher than Dane Beams, because Rocky has gone through a season averaging 130. So he's got the ticks on the board for that scoring. I don't know what his role is. They're talking about him playing as a forward pocket. As good as Port Adelaide are going to be, that means his scores are going to be volatile. If he's seriously playing 80% forward pocket, he could have 130 one week and 65 the next. So I just really can't have him in my top 20 when I don't know whether his body's going to hold up or where he's going to play. The next one, we've talked about him a fair bit. We're unsure where he's really going to sit, of whether he's going to be like a Jack McRae, where he's going to be that sort of mid-100s, or he's going to be a superstar, and that's Clayton Oliver at 22. The next is the first and only ruckman, although there's certainly another ruckman who could easily finish in the top 10, top 15 scorers for the year. But at the moment, it goes to Brody Grundy, 106 average last year. I know the big Cox factor is a concern, but look, he can clearly score as a ruck, and he actually can average over 100, even with Cox in the team. So he's clearly got to be in number one ruck, and he hasn't hit his greatest heights yet. And if they end up going with a one ruck system, he's going to be a massive scorer. Obviously not in the top 30, but Max Gawn's the other one that could be absolutely massive. Then we finish off with a list of midfielders. 24, Dyson Heppel. 25, Marcus Bontempelli. 26, Seb Ross. 27, and some may argue he could be higher, some may argue he shouldn't be even considered in the top 30, but certainly his first half of the season each and every year means he should be considered. That's Brad Ebert. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens with that new model that they've got there. I think it's more some outside time for him, and if it's outside, he's going to get the plus sixes. It was hard to ignore his 110-plus season last year, so Mark Murphy sneaked in at 28. The only one out of the big three for Sydney gets in at 29, because I think he will be the one that bounces back, and that's Luke Parker. And he keeps his... was called Dependleberry. I'm unsure whether he's that dependable anymore. But number 30 was Scott Pendlebury.
Yeah, well, that's pretty interesting. I think I can't see Heppel, man. I've got to be honest. I was thinking down the same way. I'm like, you know, he should be the one to benefit. You know, he's gone 107 before. But I was looking at his score build, and there's just nothing that stands out that he does outside of winning the ball that says he'll do it. Like, he's not an elite tackler. He's not an elite player at finding space. That's Zach Merritt. And he's not the 30 touch a game player. I just don't see. You know, I know he's a good player and he's fine and he plays every week and he's reliable, but I don't know. I'm sort of, give me the Bont, give me Cripps. I'd rather those players.
Yeah, and I went through, and these are the midfielders that missed out, and they all had something that kept Heppel in. So Ollie Wines, and it's the time on ground. I just can't see him smacking it out. The Nat Fife, who should be in the top 30, but I just can't confirm his body's going to be right for long enough. Dion Prestia, his second half of the season was absolutely superb, but again, he hasn't delivered a full season more than 102 points average, so he's just not there yet. Brad Crouch, can he get his body right? I just had that question mark. Patrick Cripps hasn't delivered in Dream Team yet, and there's a question mark about his body as well. Dane Beams, his body. I just can't confirm you're going to get 18-plus games with him. And then, obviously, the two Sydney boys in Dan Hand and JPK. I've lost faith in those boys right now, and if I'm going to pick one of the Sydney three, it's Luke Parker.
Yeah, I'm with you on Parker. Yeah. I've got him at 22, so I see him bouncing back myself.
Got Parker 28 myself. Your thoughts on Mitch Duncan? Is he one of those players unlucky to miss out, or you think because he had the career year, you don't see him backing it up?
Yeah, I certainly had him around the mark, but I just didn't see where he fit in. I'm a little bit worried with everything that's going to happen with Geelong at the moment. I just don't... Someone misses out.
Yep.
And someone gets a big gain. I think Duncan and Menegola are both very important at Geelong. I'm a little bit unsure whether Geelong see that at the moment. So Menegola, you can take that risk because he's got that forward status.
Yeah, for sure.
But Menegola's never played 22 games.
Yeah, see, I say Duncan just being that pure outside player next year, where he's just going to be possession getter, and that's about it. Like, he's not going to get the tackles on inside ball. So it's an interesting one. See, I had Grundy at 11. I was pretty high on Grundy.
For,
like, oh, yeah, wow. Pretty high on him.
That's huge.
I just don't want Mason Cox to play. Look, obviously, Statesman, you'd probably bang on right where you had him at. Was it 23? If Mason Cox does play, but if he doesn't, then he's certainly right up in that borderline top 10, top of 11, 12 players for me. But yeah, I'm pretty high on Grundy in the Dream Team format, as you were last year, Steve.
Yeah, but that was before Mason Cox entered the frame, and Grundy was banging out 115 every single week as captain. Like, you know, I've got him at 28. Interesting thing, though, in like doing the research and everything, he only finished outside of the top 10 ruck on a weekly basis once. So even when Cox was in, comparative to other rucks, he's not destroying you. I'm terrified of the Mason Cox thing, so that's why I've got him actually as my R2 behind Matty Cruiser.
What sort of game time, ruck game time, do you actually see Mason Cox getting? I mean, everyone's feared of Mason Cox, but how much ruck time is he actually going to get come game day?
Not enough to kill Grundy's scores. That's the fact. Like, well, that's what we've seen. I know it's only a small sample size, but that's what we've seen.
I think
the biggest question for Collingwood, which will impact both Grundy and or Cox, is what's happening with their forward line structure. Because I can't see what that answer is at the moment.
It's all about Ben Reid. Coleman Medal, 2018.
Yeah, but interesting. Last 10 there was pretty different to you. I had Buddy there at 25. I actually had Jeremy Howe in there.
Oh,
still pretty
gross.
Yeah, I'm pretty high. I know it's gross, but I'm still pretty high. I mean, he's going to still be top. I think he's going to be a top five averaging defender this year, or well, just outside of it. So
I've got him falling, man.
Really?
Yeah, I've got
rise of the Sharon Goat.
You got the Sharon Goat. You got Don't forget, what's his chops? Tony Langdon. Like, these guys are good intercept players. Like, he might still be a good player, but I just don't see the volume being there. I've got Julian Ellis in my top 30. I've got him at 29 and 30. They're my
other Julian and
maybe,
Ellis wasn't.
Maybe he is their full forward. Maybe
how?
Forward.
See, that's on the table, isn't it?
Yep.
Didn't even think about that. It's an interesting thought. But
swap him and Darcy Moore.
Yeah, that's right. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah. Interesting. look, if you are enjoying the show, you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher and SoundCloud. And if you've got a couple of minutes, please do leave us a review like our good mate Warnie from Dream Team did. He wrote, "Great listen week to week. Always insightful with differing opinions, which is important. Plus, love the banter thrown at fellow Tasmanian The Statesman. Recommend this podcast for those into draft-based AFL fantasy and for those that enjoy some strong opinions on movies, food, or anything else. By the way, Statesman is right. Supercoach scoring is not how fantasy football should be played."
Well done, Warnie.
Yeah, way to represent.
Thanks for that, Warnie. Much appreciated.
Way to represent the hashtag brand there, Warnie.
Yeah. God bless him. He's right though. Can I quickly say the other positions that we missed out on for the ones that should be overflowed. I did have Matty Cruiser and Max Gawn missing the 30, and I was trying to find a way to get him involved. Cruiser, outstanding year. Whether he can keep that up and keep on the park's a question mark. Max Gawn could be easily the number one ruckman in the competition and easily the top 10 scorer. Defenders, I had Jake Lloyd. And in forward, I had Michael Barlow, who I actually wanted to be in there. But again, if he puts out 22 games and he's playing in the guts, he's actually your number one forward.
Well, that's a great segue there, Statesman. We've got some great questions here today. And the first one is from Adam Sutton off the Facebook. He says, "Michael Barlow and Mitch Robinson, can they be your F1s this year?" He says, "Barlow, fully fit, is as good as any other." And he said, "Robinson should play more midfield with Rocky going to Port Adelaide." And look, I'm pretty bullish about Michael Barlow this year. He can certainly be the top scoring forward for me. He can overtake Manigault and Billings and the like, so I'm pretty bullish on him.
I agree with you, although I have a question mark about Robbo. And forgive me if I'm leading people up the garden path, but I actually remember a bit of a discussion on Twitter only over the recent week or two that may have suggested that Robbo's role is actually going to be up forward.
Yeah, I saw that
as statements
well.
He made himself, yeah.
I must have missed that one, but yeah. You'd think even Robbo playing as that midfield, he'd be more that enforcer, protector of like a Zorko type, so he's getting the tackles, but not so much as the possession, which is how he builds his game anyway. You look at, I think it was about 2 years ago, he was getting 12, 13, 14 tackles a game, but 15, 16 possessions. So it wasn't building that score to be that elite or top 10 scoring forward.
He's a role player.
Yeah. Yep.
I have trust issues with Barlow. He could average 110, but new coach, young team growing, I don't know.
But if you go through the Gold Coast team, he's their biggest bodied midfielder there, if you want to throw in Swallow. But
yeah, that's,
so you think he's going to play.
That's fine. I understand it. I completely understand it. But if you don't have trust issues with Michael Barlow, then welcome to Fantasy Footy. Enjoy your first year.
Yeah.
But I was actually looking at Barlow's record. Last year, he broke his leg, missed half the season. But the year before that, Ross Lyon dropped him and didn't even play him because he was looking for the rebuild. So, he's played, I think, 25 games in 2 years. But before that, he was actually a pretty consistent player. So, a broken leg, it's not your standard hamstring issue type injury. So, bounces back. I'm expecting him to do good things.
Second broken leg.
That's true. Another question from Adam Sutton is, does Gary Ablett get 18 games this year?
He missed my top 30 because I just don't trust it.
I think it's around the par mark, but I don't see him getting that. I think it's more close to the 16 games. I mean, they've got a trip to Perth pretty early on, two trips to Adelaide and a trip to Sydney and the Gold Coast. So there's five games right there that he's probably going to miss because I don't see him travelling too much this year.
I've got him at 26. If he plays 18 games, I'll be very happy to have him as my M3.
Yep, fair call.
Yep, absolutely. From our mate Alan Borland, will Nick Riewoldt finish top five this year?
I'll be ranking him there. Not sure I finished there.
I think he's only going to be playing about two or three games this year, so it's going to be hard, and that's only when he plays against the Statesman to score 200.
Oh, yes. I knew that had to be coming.
Certainly did. From Scott Warwick, he asks, consistency. What factor does it play in your rankings and drafting of players? So a player's consistency.
Yeah, for me, it's actually more of a positional thing. When I'm talking about defenders, I actually really want my defenders to be quite consistent. Like I mentioned Jake Lloyd before, fine, he's not going to give me 140, but he's very rarely going to give me under 80. So I'm really like my defenders to be reliable because I like taking chances with forwards. I really like playing matchups with my key forwards. We see how deep the forward line is year in, year out. You can find people off the waiver wire to play in the right situations. So I'm more prepared to be risky in my forward lines because if you're going to win matches, I love the guys who can pop and give you the massive scores, especially those key forwards in your Supercoach format. So that's kind of where I sit. It is kind of scary having those guys like Handsome Tom sitting in your forward line, but you can generally play it safe.
Yeah, I'm pretty on ball with the consistent players. I'm unlike Steve. I'm a pretty straight shooter when it comes to picking teams and don't take too much of a risk. So I'm up there with Steve in having a pretty vanilla team when it comes to consistency. But in terms of rankings, it plays a massive part because you look at someone, say Gary Ablett, 5 years ago he was a modicum of consistency and was always, we'd be top three, no worries. But now, with the body issues, that consistency is not there, and it makes it harder to rank him. I mean, when he's on song, easily top five player, but now with those body issues, Is he M2, M3, M4? It just makes it harder to rank him for me.
Yeah, you can certainly get riskier as the draft goes on.
Yeah, that's true.
Your early picks, you want to bank them.
From at BrodyJohnson94 on Twitter, he asks, what do you see Gus Brayshaw averaging this year?
Well, you're the Melbourne expert, Jono.
Well, for me, he has the potential to be that 80 to 85 player. I said potential to be, but it's all about his role this year. He doesn't have a clear path role for me. Like a few years ago, he's playing on the wing, he's playing half forward, he's getting building scores through possession, tackles, marks. I don't know where he's going to be playing this year. He's listed as a defender, but I don't think he's suited to be playing defender. He could be playing that forward pocket, which is just fantasy death, where he's not going to be kicking, he won't kick as many goals, he's not getting the possessions or tackles. So yes, he can average 80 to 85, but I think he's going to be somewhere more in the low to mid 70s.
He should be a watch for the preseason, because if his body is right, because we all know he's had the concussion issues, but if his body is right and he's performing really well and plays to what his capacity is, because I, correct me if I'm wrong, gentlemen, we're talking fourth or fifth year.
Fifth year.
So, yep, so we're at the breakout phase. So if his body is right and he's going to play an important role for the club, and showing the signs of the breakout, as listed as a defender, could be a gold mine.
Mm. See, I had him last year. Now, when we did our articles, I had him there, averaging that 80 to 85 plus wingman, and then looking to build into this year. But obviously, with those concussion issues, it hasn't happened. So hopefully he can get on the park.
You suck, Jono.
Thank you. One of our last questions is from at Johan Oak on Twitter, and I actually like this question a lot. He goes, if you could know a player's average at the end of 2018 now, who would it be?
That's a really good question. I was kicking around looking at my ranks, and I came up with Andrew McGrath. I know a little bit's been made about him moving into the midfield. If he's stuck in defence, he's probably going to average around the 70, but if he moves into the midfield, he could average anything. So he'd be a player I'd like to know, because I wouldn't mind having him in my team.
For me, Jared Witts, because I think he's still a late-level ruckman, but if he actually takes the next level just purely as the number one ruckman for Gold Coast, he could be a bit of a goldmine.
Yeah, I actually had two. That was Handsome Tom and Luke Dalhouse. They're just two I've got a bit of interest in, and both had poorish years by their standards, and I'd like to see where they end up in 2018.
Yeah, I'd have to say Dale's a really tough guy to place in the ranks, isn't he?
He certainly is. Certainly is. But now, as always, we have our top five lists, and this week, It's a doozy. It's our top five movies that made you cry, whether it's as an adult or as a child. Steve, why don't you kick us off with your top five, mate?
Yeah, look, this will shock people, the heartless bastard I am, but I'm a huge crier at the movies. I think I empathise more with the fictional world than I do with the one that I live in. Which makes some twisted sense. Got a couple of honourables. Big Hero 6. I thought Big Hero 6 was an amazing movie. Really tugged at the old heartstrings with Baymax.
Haven't seen it.
Oh, it's a ripper. You should. No, it's a good one. And
I'll have to get into it.
And Life is Beautiful. Thought that was a bit of a tearjerker, but I don't know. Subtitle movies, they kind of lose something for me, because I'm very aware that I'm watching a movie when I'm reading it. So my top five. Number five, I've got Red Dog. I mean, you know, when he goes to the cemetery, I'm just like, come on, man. Like, any movie with an animal where you know things are going to go sour, that's pretty bad.
I think I've actually actively avoided that movie because of that reason.
You know what's going to happen, don't you?
Yeah.
Anyway, that was a real tearjerker. Number four, I've got Up.
Yeah.
If it was for sheer volume, this would be number one. Like, I think the first 20 minutes I ran through 87 boxes of Kleenex. Like, isn't this supposed to be a fun movie? Like,
just stabs you in the heart right off the bat.
Jesus Christ, let's go. This is a kid's movie. Number three, I got Philadelphia. Just the montage where he's a kid, you know, it's in this home movie. It's pretty sad, pretty good movie. Number two, I got Turner and Hooch.
Yes.
Child's story. My grandma always used to take me to the movies. The last movie we saw before she passed, and when the dog dies,
Hooch gets shot.
And, of course, it does have Reginald Vell Johnson from overrated action movie and definitely not a Christmas movie, Die Hard. And number one, it's Gattaca. I think it's an unbelievable movie, and that end scene with Jude Law is pretty... it's pretty full-on. Pretty full-on.
I've seen Gattaca.
Pretty handsome man as well at that point, Jude Law.
No harm. But, Turner and Hooch was actually on the other night, and, again, just sitting there watching it, and when Hooch gets shot, just a tear rolling down. I'm wishing it was Tom Hanks who got shot anyway, and these things happen.
I noticed you were sort of nodding your head to two Tom Hanks movies there.
Well, Philadelphia, I go the other way. I don't cry. I'm cheering in that movie.
Oh, what?
Unbelievable. Well, you'd be crying because they had to pay the big settlement. It's just like, the corporate guy's lost.
That's all right. He got his just desserts. Statham, what are your top five movies?
Well, to be honest, I needed a bit of a help with this because, unlike Steve, I am a heartless bastard both in real life and in movie life. So I could only come up with three, but Mrs. Statham pointed out that the 2005 AFL Grand Final was not a movie.
Okay, I'll scratch my number one then for the 2016 Grand Final.
So I'll only list the two, but she did give me three boring answers to round up the five. So number two for me was The Green Mile.
Yeah.
Another Tom Hanks movie, actually.
Yeah, what's going on?
Never watched it in its entirety. It's just too long for me. It's too much Tom Hanks.
When John Coffey dies, because obviously he was the saint in that movie. And number one, I'm a bit like the same with Steve. It's The Connection with Animals. And that's Marley and Me. I thought that was a very touching movie. So seeing I couldn't get the 2005 AFL Grand Final, which obviously was a tearjerker for all the Sydney Swan supporters, all the neutral supporters, and of course it was a tearjerker for the West Coast supporters for different reasons. But then she gave me a list of the three. So she gave number one Titanic, and then I pointed out to her, actually, I laughed during that film when it went upside down and they were falling all the way down and bouncing off the funnel.
Mind you, I did laugh at that as well.
Yeah. heartless bastard I am. The Notebook, and I've never seen that, to be honest, and never will. And third, another Tom Hanks movie, Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
So she said that was a tearjerker. Again, I really liked the movie and really enjoyed it and laughed, not cried. But yes, there is the connection that, you know, when Jenny passes away and then when he passes away and obviously the son starts to, with a different forest, but starts to carry on his father's tradition. So they were the Mrs. Statesman's three was Titanic, Notebook and Forrest Gump. And of course, my three were Marley, Green Mile and the 2005 AFL Grand Final.
Yeah, no, anything with Tom Hanks dying is good by me, but my top five, there with Steve, had Up in there. That movie just gets, it's just Disney. They just know how to get you every single time. Number four for me was Toy Story 3. It's like the end of an era when all the toys are packed up and Andy's done with them and go to the childcare center. So I grew up watching Toy Story when I was a kid, and definitely a few tears were there as well. I did have the Pursuit of Happiness in there. It's just something about a guy down on his luck and then he's like he's on his last few bucks and gets that machine working where he sells it and can start paying for a house for his kid and feeding his kid. That scene just really got to me there in The Pursuit of Happiness. Turner and Hooch, loved that movie as a kid. Saw it at the cinemas, and when Hooch gets shot, just started bawling my eyes out. as well. But yes, I did have the 2016 AFL Grand Final on there for obvious reasons. 60-odd years of just not being able to see your team win it. The emotions just got to me that day, and I was absolutely bawling my eyes out, and I still cry every time I watch the replay. It's just can't help yourself.
That's interesting. I was like, I've never seen Braveheart, but I've heard that that's a. I thought you guys would have had that.
No,
I don't know. I haven't seen a lot of these movies, to be honest. I haven't seen Marley and Me. I'm not going to watch that. I know what happens to the dog. Keep me out of that.
It's actually quite a good movie. Actually,
it is actually a good movie up until towards the end there. But
definitely tweet us through the movies that have made you cry. Someone said The Matrix 2.
What?
Because it was terrible.
I think that was more because... Yes.
Yeah.
I think that wraps up the show for this week. As Steve said, please do tweet us in the movies that did make you cry, and you can do that by through Twitter, where we are at The Draft Doctors or at Statesman33. Check out the website, thedraftdoctors.com.au, and we have the Instagram and the Facebook as well. If you've got any other questions or want to see any of the polls put up over the coming weeks and Christmas period, please hit us up. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Draft Doctors Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and review.